gotta be a little bit.
Yeah, well, that, do you have any idea how the selling went on that? That's pretty favorable.
Oh, yeah. That's good. We got it all over Fairbanks.
Yeah.
I didn't walk in Safeway Market. It's a brand new puppy. Right?
Yeah.
The present, you know, Alaskan goose.
Uh-huh.
The goose is my Alaskan summer. But, oh, gee, that honey, those pictures. Holy, great. Oh, man. Straight up.
See, I took another first climb crew to Mount Russell.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I had some tape on telling me at Raphael, the top of that
one. Yeah.
They climbed the Northwest Ridge of that. Good one, a U.S. Citizen civil engineer, and two Dutchmen made it up that sport, but it took six others to support them.
Question, Don. What would your estimate, maybe you know exactly, Charlie, how many guys, since they've begun to climb McKinley?
300.
How many guys are, there's been 300 that have
about
died?
There was a 200 and stuff. Hell, I've been hauling people up there since 51, every year.
How many are still up there?
Well, probably 18 or... Well, wait a minute, there's seven in one crew from the Wilcox expedition.
Right,
then there's Bat Key, who I know we got him out. There's the Mount Huntington, Dave Roberts, remember? That's his 7-8. There must be about... Well, then there's the two of the 17,010. I'm talking about, and then Thayer, and Thayer Basin, let's see, did they need one man up there in Thayer Basin? Let's see, we're up to 10, 11. And then on the Muldrow, there's, oh, I say 16 guys up there, not counting the people in the wreckage on Mount Silverthorne of the DC-3 and the C-54. There's quite a few in that wreckage there. And there's a...
Well, now, that isn't the one that Ray went up on. That was on Sanford.
Yeah, I'm talking
about... This is another story, then.
Silverthorne. Well, Northwest hit the east buttress of Silverthorne.
Where's Silverthorne?
That's east of McKinley. It's 14,000 feet high. They almost missed it, but not quite. I thought it was. It's.
Where are they going and where are they coming from?
Fairbanks Anchorage.
Northwest.
Of course. I don't think it was a military flight. I think it was Northwest somehow or other.
Straight out and up commercial.
Yeah.
And they're still up there.
Still there. So all together, there must be 30, 40 guys up there. Oh, also from the Institute of Riding Biology, Gary Pohl at 17,000. With him, of course, are the two people in the wreckage of the 180 up there, Elliot Stevenson. And there's a few scattered around. There's some old timers over there.
Well, yeah, that's the Northwest flight now. That is an explosion.
No, but I had seen it. I was up there in 51.
There's no way to get in there.
Yeah. He and Washburn got into it right after it happened.
How come he didn't bring him home?
Oh, Christ. Well, how are you going to get him out on that 70-80% incline ice? And
so he didn't leave him in there. And
100 feet higher and they'd have missed him.
Ew.
Say,
right.
I talked to a man that had a fantastic experience with McKinley when the Lockheed Electra first came out. I'll think of his name shortly. But he said he was flying a twin engine Lockheed Electra, one of the hottest planes of about the 1938 model. Twin engine, 202.
This is now not the turboprop.
No, you're this is 1939.
Right.
They didn't have a turboprop.
No, right. I just want to make this.
Okay. Bren Collins is this man's name. He's actively flying in the Anchorage area. Yeah.
Grin.
Yeah, he flies the
GRIN.
Bren Collins. Anyway, they get this, he's flying for this company, MK, I guess, and they got this new Lockheed Electra. And he's solo coming in the Anchorage to pick up a whole bunch of VIPs. So he thought he'd, for once in his life, get a good look at the top of McKinley. And so he just climbed right on up. and it didn't occur to him that he needed oxygen. And he said he couldn't see it very well from looking out the front, so for some reason he set the thing up in trim, walked to the back of the airplane. That was the last thing he remembered until he hears one engine quit. Mm. And he said he realized that he was in the plane, nobody was flying it.
He did this, he had hypoxia. I mean, he was.
Yeah, he just walked back, right, looked out the side window, and conked out. He's at 21-2000, going over the top of McKinley. I think they did have an autopilot of some type.
Yeah.
Anyway, the thing was set up, the engine had just quit, and they waked him up. Guess where he was at? College Fjord, east of Anchorage. Down between the east of Marcus, the west of Mount Marcus Baker, going down College Fjord about 500 feet off the water, going down.
He was out all that time.
Yeah, and he said, oh, they got the damn gas gauge that switched around just before it went into College Sound, College Fjord.
Oh, man.
Down between the peaks, and here he went, zap.
Oh, talking about luck, man.
Oh. But anyway. Oh,
there was two guys up in, Pete Haglund saw me here a couple of weeks ago. There was a couple of guys, and one guy ran a service station in Fairbanks, and he had a buddy with him. And they were flying in from someplace into Fairbanks at night. You've been hunting, flying along in there, I don't know. And all of a sudden, they both blacked out and carbon monoxide. The next thing they know, they wake up, everything's dead. This guy wakes up and crashed. Here he is, it's pitch dark. He's laying there down in South Chapman Street.
He's what?
He had gone down, they'd gone down up on South Chapman Street. It's that little side street of the town. One minute the guy's flying along and everything's great, the next minute he's waking up on the ground amidst the wreckage of his plane, and it's pitch dark.
Wow.
He was interrupted, and he wasn't stopped.
Was the other guy hurt?
The other guy had a broken arm and a broken ankle. He was still out cold. Can you imagine waking up on a scratch on you, and here you are, in the middle of the wreckage of your plane, pitch dark, and they both just conked out like that from carbon monoxide. They had a cavity. Weird.
Yeah.
Look at those guys that bailed out over Europe in some unbelievable altitude, land on their back in a plowed field.
That didn't happen too many times.
No, but it's supposedly recorded. In that Ripley's, or not Ripley's, but in that record book. Yeah.
Well, when they had the Operation Snowbird, I was over across the river here when they jumped about 5,000 troops, and one of them shoot partially open, but it did partially open about 50 feet off the ground. The guy lived in the swamp, the water flew about 50 feet in the air, and they picked him up, but he got pretty badly shook up. It was a soft swamp. Across the river.
Well, Don, I think that pretty well gets you. I can go on now. I can write for another week now, week and a half. And then, well, here, let me give you a clue on what we'll be doing next time. I don't know exactly when, but the next time we'll be talking the Mexican holiday.
Yeah.
And we'll be talking the disasters of 1950, airplane loss. And flying operation through 1951, the Morrison crash.
Yeah.
In other words, what your operation was at that time, you know,
yeah,
what you were doing, how many planes you had, what kind. So, it's coming along good. Shut it down.
Okay. Yeah, I'd start with the most important, spectacular climbs, like the ones that'll be the toughest. To get information on would be Boyd Everett's lateral climbs of the south face of McKinley. And I'll have good luck, I think, with Ricardo Cassin on his original south face climb of McKinley. This is one of the shockers of the world. you recall it.
Mr. Deere had the bet on this.
Because Tim had a tremendous bet with the industrialist friend that he climbed without ever having, seen the south face of McKinley. He bet a considerable fortune he could climb it. When he did see it, he nearly fell out of the airplane. He did climb the south face. Now, members of Lionel Trey's great expedition on the Northwest Ridge of Mount Huntington, I'll try to locate them through the prefect of police in Paris, because Lionel Trey was a Secret Service of the French
Soiree or Sourette.
And Subi was his anchor man. He's a professional dentist.
One thing, Don, that time cautioned me. He said, when you get to the point where you're going to start laying out photographic material, try as much as you can to keep your, to concentrate on photographic representation of the stuff that's in the book.
Yeah. Oh, yeah,
like,
yeah,
we
yeah.
can put some extra stuff in.
Oh,
but
yeah.
He says, try wherever possible to
Reality.
Right.
Now, Hans Moser, professional photographer, took some of the most fantastic movie and stills. I've never seen the stills, but he made the movie Skis Over McKinley, and he's mentioned in this tape number 10 on Dr. Lathrop. He figures prominently in Dr. Lathrop's pickup. The son of Dr. Lathrop, who ice-axed his right foot, not only did serious damage to his foot, but destroyed the boot and also froze the foot. And I picked him up a little windy corner at 4,000 feet. 1963. That's on tape 10. But one member, as I say, Boyd Everett's crew. The next one would be Helmut and Raphael, and then probably Heinrich Harrer.
How do you spell that?
H-A-R-R-E-R. He wrote the book 7 Years in Tibet.
I had it right.
Did you ever hear of the book, 7 Years in Tibet? You ought to read it if you ever had time.
I read hers on it.
Fantastic thing.
How about this Sequito expedition?
Machico Sequito.
Did you get any
pictures? We have a picture of them with 14,300.
The whole group.
Pickup. No, well, a picture of the body.
Did you get a picture of them where they took off?
They must have pictures, because they had fine equipment and they...
Because that climb, Don, is going to figure prominently in the book. I start the book and end the book with that climb.
You do it?
Yeah. I'll show you. Don't panic. I'll show you a little gimmick I'm using. Obviously. Time says it's great. It says it'll really, boy, when a guy picks that book up and opens that first page, it really grabs him. And so,
we'll see
what it's like. See what you think of it.
Anyway, then Blesser on his south face of... And there's just about three dozen first climbs since February. That would include Coconut, the French expedition on the Rooster's Col. That would include Barry Bavin and Tony Smythe on the first two summits of the Moose's Tooth.
We haven't got any materials on these.
I know. Well, we've got the material.
How about the day baiting deal? There must be a lot.
Oh, Christ, they'll have tremendous coverage, because they have all of them professional.
Is John Day still alive?
Yeah, I'm sure he is.
I talked to
Cruz.
What did he say? I called him long distance. What
did he say?
Oh, he acted with him for about 10 minutes, and he, this is what threw me off the trail, see. Originally, I had the thing written like they were on the summit, they were waltzing around, and in their hypoxic joy, they toppled over the edge.
They fell about
1,900 feet.
Well, he's doing them. He fell how much?
Well, no, 800 feet.
Yeah.
Okay.
800 feet. I'll go along with that.
Fell to 1,900 feet.
No, they fell. They fell to the 17,400 foot level.
So
the 18,000 foot level.
They fell from 18,000.
About.
Yeah.
Well, they really rolled and tumbled, but they free fell. He said 100 feet. Well, maybe so, but it's my God steep.
Okay, but what he said was they met John Day and They met John Day, they met Schoening, they met the Whitakers.
Yeah.
On the summit.
Yeah.
And he said at that time, it was the first time there was two successful parties on the summit at the same time.
Uh-huh.
Okay. So then, Helga Beating outfit, without Helga Beating, because she was still down at 17.5 or something like that, or 17.3, they went back down. They've been on the summit, they're going back down. Okay. And then here comes John Day and these other three guys. And they're all eight. They made the summit, you know, jumping around and happy. And then he said that they just started down. And they had climbed
ahead
down.
Ahead of them or behind
them?
Oh,
behind them. They heard him fall. Cruz says he heard him fall. They were about to go less than a quarter of a mile. And he said he heard him fall. They couldn't see him. Anyway, apparently what happened, they were down there, they started to traverse I think if I remember correctly, a 45 degree, not a very difficult ice face. They were roped together, and somebody screwed up, and they fell. And they fell about, he said, 300 feet, and they finally...
Jesus, is that all?
Yeah, that's what he said they fell.
Listen, according to the tracks, my God, it looked like about 800.
Well, that's what I couldn't figure out, see, and you said there were refrigerator-sized chunks of snow pulled out.
Well,
he claims it was a packed ice surface.
Well, down below the glare ice, they was trying hard to get stuff. And they're all expert icemen. And they sock those ice picks in and tear out a chunk and the whole works go again.
Well,
that's the way it looked to me.
You know, look, he's gonna realize, you know, here again, the way I word it is, there's not that much difference, you know.
Well,
and I'm telling it the way it looked to you.
Yeah,
I use this gimmick.
Okay.
Here's the gimmick I use. You're tooling around up there 500 feet off the deck, and you spot this. And I wrote it exactly like you told it. In other words, you're looking at this scar down the side
it
of the mountain.
It looked like a bunch of alley cats come
right
up the side of it.
Okay, that's the way I wrote it.
Yeah.
And then I said, later, he would find out, you would find out. That, and then I changed just a little bit. In other words, changed the fact that they did not fall off the lip. Well, you'll see it when you read it.
Yeah, okay.
So, anyway, that should, okay, let me, now on these photographs, well, there's no
look,
problem. We've got Day, we can get photographs of
this,
that.
Barbara Lilly was on a crew from California that made 17 first climbs, as I recall, in the early 50s, in her angles. She also was later on McKinley, too. But I have her address, and I'm firing everybody. Crash picture letter.
I sure appreciate it.
Oh, well, Christ, you've got to
have I do this, you know, but I have to get the addresses from you, and I'd have to write. It's better, you know.
Oh, no, I can write to them direct. Miura, I tell you, little Yu Imura, the solo climber, took a picture of himself on the summit. He climbed McKinley August 24th, 1971.
Mm.
Little solo Japanese climber. That's our first climb. He climbed it 3 days up and two back.
Really?
And waited 3 days for weather. Non-stop. Tremendous little athlete.
Wow.
And good luck, or if he'd have fallen, he would have had nobody to recover him. But he solo climbed many of the mountains of the world, including some of the Himalayas. But that's on file in the Anchorage Times. His solo summit picture.
Mm.
He set up his Nikon camera and shot a picture of himself, and it's great. That should be one of the pictures.
Oh yeah, you bet.
But
see, if we're going to use that in there somewhere, I should mention. Say,
yeah.
You know, like fancy this. You know, here's a and just mention the fact
solo
that in so and so such and such a day.
Dave Roberts
climb.
On the Wickersham Wall climb. He wrote the Mountain of My Fear, Mount Huntington. That was several years later. Also, I took Dave Roberts to the Cathedral Spires, and he's a real camera bug. The Cathedral Spires, I took the Bulgarians, they call themselves, a bunch of guys from New York or someplace, over there.
The Bulgarians.
Yeah, anyway, last year there was 26 expeditions, and it's been building up a few more every season since 51. But Washburn's got some tremendous pictures. Those survey pictures, I found one of them the other day.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we picked up the railroad level and run right up the top of McKinley.
Sure.
It's in color.
One thing I'll have to do, or I can do, is we'll get a real nice picture of McKinley showing the face of the line.
Oh, jeez.
And make our little map, you know.
Yesterday.
Windy corner.
Yesterday. Was one of the best composition days I've ever seen on McKinley. With the cirrus,
mm-hmm.
a touch of lenticular standing wave, not much,
mm-hmm.
and this, whether he does it or not, will remain to be seen, but the photographer was out of his mind, and he had some tremendous equipment with some great lenses, and he said they're coming up next week again to do this fashion show on mm-hmm. McKinley. When they call back for a weather check, I'm going to tell them to bring up some halflings or Hefner's snow bunnies and a few multicolored.
Okay, it's a Playboy.
Beach. Yeah.
No kidding, it's a Playboy bunch you're taking up there?
Oh, no. This is the West Coast advertising. I'm going to tell them to get some snow bunnies and some big multicolored beach umbrellas and some tables and straws with a 3-foot stem and oversized ears for their bunnies and everything,
sure.
and bring them up there, and they're going to import a snow machine and just have a ball up there next weekend.
Okay. Where are you going to take them out?
Mountain House. Yeah. Boy, they love it.
Yeah.
The senior editor and the chief executive and the chief cameraman and Gary King and his wife came up, all five of them. I get all five of them off in about 600 feet for that turbo job, plus myself 200 or 300 pounds of it here.
Put you over.
Well worth the money.
Right on
my face.
You know.
Yeah.
Make or perform at that height, eh?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Well,